الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood, whereby we are at the moment trying to analyze and understand the socio-political status in which the prophets and messengers belong to. And we said that they belong to the lower class. They didn't belong to the upper higher class, the rich, the affluent, and the royal families and the royal class of the society. They didn't belong to that. They came from within, you can say, within the depths of the weaker class of the society, the normal general public of the society. That's how they were. And we give the example of Iran before the coming of the Islamic Revolution. It was like this, that there were also two groups of people. There was one group of people that were, they had the control of the society in totality, in every sense, while another group of people were the ones that were downtrodden and suppressed. They were the lower class. And this duality was there in different places of the world at the time of the prophets. Also, this was there. And the prophets came from the lower class. They didn't come from the higher class of the community. This is there. If you look at history, all the messengers of God, all the prophets of God, they came from the lower class of the society.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, many times when we look at the world today, we feel that there is a form of democracy whereby the normal people of the community, the poor class, the lower class, let's say, those who are poor, those who are downtrodden, the weaker class, has authority. And they have the decision-making power to decide for the future of their societies and their communities. But if you look at it carefully, this is not the case. Majority of the democracies are not ones that really reflect the will of the people. You look at, for example, some of the countries of the world, whereby in those countries, you, for example, have the House of Lords. Okay, now what do you mean by the House of Lords? Whereby in these House of Lords, only an exclusive group of people are allowed to enter in that House of Lords, and they have a say in the decision making of the community. Or for example, there is a particular country, there are certain countries where the royal family, there is a royal family, and it's exclusive to that only, and they have the authority to, for example, decide when a country can go to war and whether it should go or it should not go to war. So it looks like it is a democracy, but it isn't a democracy in reality. The actual decisions are made somewhere else. Look at the other communities also, whereby they claim that there is a democracy. But in reality, there is a group of rich people that are monopolizing the decision-making of those places. Even if there is, for example, there are some ministers and some parliamentarians and presidents chosen by the people, but at the end of the day, who ends up being chosen, I mean, who ends up being allowed to take that position of presidency? How does he find his way up to the level that he can now be chosen as a president? How is that vetting process? Is it really a real vetting process, or is just a, you know, you can say a fake, a surreal, you know, vetting process, which is not real, not based on true criteria, but based on what the rich people, those big corporate companies and their chiefs, those big social media companies and their chiefs, they are the ones that decide, or some of the rich people of the world that control the wealth, the 1%, are they the ones who decide, or it's the people who decide? At the end of the day, it seems like there is a kind of illusion of democracy whereby people feel that they have authority, but they do not have authority in reality. And this is something sad that we need to think about as communities. And we will see that when we talk about prophethood, how the prophets came from these same communities and how they gave value to the will of the people, inshallah, in the coming sessions.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we say that when we look at the world of today, we still see that there is this duality, that there is a rich class, there is a 1%, and there is a 99%. There is a class, a group of people that are in full control about the future of the country, about the future of the community, but there's another group that is not in control of the future of that community. The moral direction that community has to take, the social perceptions of that community, the type of mindset that community is supposed to be having, the fact that community, when can it go to war and when it cannot go to war. All of this is something that is unfortunately decided by a very small group of people and does not reflect the will of the general society. And many times, unfortunately, because nowadays it has become even more complicated, the opinions of the people are manipulated by these same rich bourgeoisies to control the way they think, to manipulate their feelings, their thoughts through the different social media platforms that exist. So in other words, what is happening is that we have a group of people that want to control and another group of people that are weak and they don't have a will in reality. There is an illusion of will, but there is no real will. In the past, what would happen is that people would know that I am controlled by another person. But nowadays it has happened that even a person who is controlled does not realize that he is being controlled. Does not realize that. And this is a sad reality. Now, all of this discussion was to make us understand one thing, that in the world, we have this duality. In different parts of the world, in different stages of the growth of humanity, where the prophets came from is from this group that was downtrodden, that was looked down upon, that was called by the rich and the high class as the lower class. This is the group from which the messengers came with strength, with wisdom, with knowledge and understanding, and they guided the communities towards the right direction. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio. قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه. A diverse range of programs. Spirituality.
Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Youth Station. A very warm welcome. I am Zainab.
Asma is here. Wa alaikum assalam, sister. And salam alaikum to all the listeners.
And to me.
Wa alaikum assalam. And to you, of course.
Because I'm also listening.
Yes.
And seeing you at the same time. A pleasure.
Of course, the pleasure is all mine. You have no idea how happy it is when we have an episode together.
Yes, let's get into something spiritual. What I have learned from this, what I have learned from what comes after Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Wow.
The Holy Quran, the verses, how they have impacted my life, your life. Let's talk about them.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Zainab, I have a personal question now. It just popped out right at the moment into my head.
Yeah.
I know your background, and I know that maybe you didn't have too much of information about the Holy Book of Quran, and because of actually your environment and the place you were living. So how was your feeling when, for the first time, you started reading that with a purpose?
I won't say that until I was 28, I never opened Quran, and I never actually tried to contemplate or ponder on it. For the first time I opened Quran, I was very young. I was a child because as a Muslim, I was born in a Muslim family, and I was sent to the madrasas, and they would make you...
It's called.
They would make you hifs.
Memorize
the Quran. And I memorized a lot of surahs from the last juz, but I never knew what they are saying.
So you didn't know the meaning. You only went for memorization.
And that's what they do, though, there. Like, all the Muslims are there.
So what's the use of it if you're not going to go for meaning?
That's what came into my mind as I grew up. Like, you know, the more I grew up, the more I had this question in my mind. What I am reading in different language that I'm not even understanding. So I started searching for meanings. And then with tech, these small clips used to come. Allah loves the patient. Allah is with you. They were soothing. They were very, very soothing. So, but I won't...
So the first impression was that these words are soothing.
With translations.
With translations.
Because without translations, they sounded to me like I am memorizing something. It is something. It's taking me something. It's not like finishing here. Because if I memorized my chapters, my school chapters... It used to finish there. It would not create any curiosity within me.
So honestly speaking, when you were reading that and going through the verses without knowing the meaning, did it happen to give you any feeling or impression?
A feeling of curiosity. That's what I'm saying. If I used to go through my chapters, my school chapters, they won't leave any curiosity. I memorized and that was finished. But reading this Arabic text and memorizing it.
So you wanted to know more.
I want to know, like, why I'm memorizing this? What is in it?
Yeah.
And why are my parents are telling me, like, when you go to this school, go with ablution. And then when you come back, do not, tell us more about it, the more you learn, and recite it for us. You know, I had this appreciating behavior from parents all the time. I would learn more. So it would develop curiosity within me. What is it in this book that I have to memorize? I recite and my parents get excited and they feel proud. Oh, our child has, memorized these mm-hmm. many surahs. So this developed a curiosity of knowing more, basically.
And you went for the translations.
Yeah, I went for the translations in different languages.
And after knowing the translations, you got to think of that book as a very soothing book.
Soothing feeling, but at the same time, it was very confusing until I started contemplation. Because yeah. I started contemplation at 28. And that's what helped me. Actually, when I started contemplating. So before I start telling the story of my contemplation, I'd like to ask you, since you have lived in just Islamic country all the mm-hmm. time, and definitely you have had this
pleasure of knowing this book with translation ever since I was a child.
Yeah, since you were a child. So how has yeah. this impacted your life?
Well, in a lot and many ways.
Like
when I was a child, my mom and dad, they both cared too much about this holy book. And, you know, it's not like there goes a day without my parents reading a chapter of that book and us hearing that. So even when I was a child, when I was 4 or 5 even, I every morning heard my parents reading that book. And as just they were reading that book, at that age, well, we have no clue and hint about the meaning of the verses of that book.
True.
But since I know Arabic, I got some hints about the meanings. And then it was so interesting for me. Before going to school, my mom actually had enrolled me in a class that they taught the holy book in it. And then going there, I grew to develop some sort of feeling for that book in a way that I remember I memorized a lot of verses from that book, even in that very young age. Now, up until then, just as you said, it's just curiosity and the new things that you hear and you want to know more. As I got older, and as I got to know more of the meaning of this book, I started to, if I say creating a friendship with that book, it's not very much illogical. And every time I had a problem, every time I felt like I'm at the end of the rope, I went for this book and I found refuge in every single verse I read. Now, let's go for a break and then we'll go for the rest of the
sure.
story.
Inna hadha al-Qur'ana yahdi ويبشر المؤمنين الذين يعملون الصالحات أن لهم أجرا كبيرا.
Indeed, this Quran guides to that which is most suitable and gives good tidings to the believers who do righteous deeds, that they will have a great reward.
Station. This is Zainab with
Asma. It's your service. And we're talking about the Holy
Quran.
Book of Quran
has changed our lives.
Yeah. And I said in many, many ways, you already have mentioned your interest in that book. Well, I was telling you that as we grow older and we start to develop a friendship with this book, it starts to be our shelter.
Yeah. So Asma, let me ask you one more question over here.
Yes, do ask.
What was the verse you remember that changed you?
Well, there's this verse that I love too much. The Arabic version says, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل يا عبادي الذين أسرفوا على أنفسهم لا تقنطوا من رحمة الله إن الله يغفر الذنوب جميعا إنه هو الغفور الرحيم. O my servants who have committed excesses against their own souls, do not despair of the mercy of Allah. Indeed, Allah will forgive all sins. Indeed, He is all forgiving, the all merciful.
Wow.
Now see how poetic it is and how kind and how full of mercy this verse is.
And this gives all hopes.
Exactly.
To
it's all
hopes. Have lost hopes.
Yeah.
In life, or who say to themselves, because I have met so many friends, you know, who would say that, I asked one person, why are you committing so many sins one after the other?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that this is a sin. And the person was like, because I committed once and I know Allah is not going to forgive
yeah.
me. So I have just continued this chain. And I was like, you know, remembering this verse. And I was like, no, this is not like this. You know, you should never
yeah.
get hopeless from the mercy of Allah. Allah
and
SWT is always
actually,
there.
Before asking the verse that has changed your life, I would mention another verse, which is also so beautiful.
Sure. I would like to know.
Well, Allah Himself says that, remember me and make sure that I will remember you.
Wow.
So every time we remember Him, He's thinking of us at the very same. There is actually no single moment that He forgets about us.
It's a very, very beautiful, very, I don't know.
Heart-touching.
Yeah.
What to say. Yeah. It is worth melting for.
Yes.
So now tell me about the verses that have attracted your attention.
The first verse that made me cry.
Yes, which was?
It was a verse from Surah Al-Fatar. The verse says like this, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ya ayyuhal insanu ma agharraka bi rabbikal kareem.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, the human being, what is it that has deceived you towards your Lord who is so kareem, who is
generous?
Yes. When I said my life was actually changed with the contemplation of Quran, because in verse 82 of Surah Nisa, Allah says that, why don't you contemplate in Quran? Why
mm-hmm.
don't you go for tadabbur? Contemplation is basically tadabbur,
yeah.
tadabbur. And Allah says, why don't you go for tadabbur? Why don't you go for contemplation? Because if you go for contemplation, you'll for sure get to know that the sequence of the verses, the coordination between the verses, and then you will find out that this book is from God, not from non-God. Otherwise, if you don't do the contemplation, you will surely get astray. You'll find that this is from someone which is not God. So just to realize why a particular verse is in a particular chapter, why not in any other chapter, you got to actually find the sequence and coordination between the verses coming before and after. And then you actually pondering so much on the words, Rabbil Kareem, you know, then actually
yeah.
this word Rabb
the generous
over here,
God, yeah.
Yeah, you know, this actually, Allah uses the word, Allah does not use the word Allah over here, or, you know, some other word for being God, or like, you know, Allah or someone else, the other names for God in Arabic. He uses the word Rabb, which is very, very close.
Yeah.
Rabb carries so many things with it. Like, you know, we even use in Persian
exactly.
the word Rabbi, which is the one who takes care, who nurtures you. So Allah is saying, the one who nurtured you in a very, very generous way, what is it that deceived you towards Him? Then in the following verses, He says that, isn't it the me who did this for you, who did that for you, who managed this thing for you, managed that thing for you? And that too, not just normally, because our parents arrange things for us in a very normal way, in a
yeah.
very natural way. But He says that I arranged everything for you in a very generous manner.
So now it's very interesting. And actually, I'm sure that if we go through too much more of our experience with the verses of this book, we're going to get more of proofs that would make it clear for every single one that if we ponder upon every single verse of this book, we would come to face too much of interesting materials for us to think about and to pin our hopes on, because the connection between us and our Lord is such a delicate connection that has to be stronger And it doesn't happen unless you think more, unless you develop such an assurance in your heart toward your Allah, toward your Lord. And something which is very important, actually, we have to take it into notice, is the fact that this book is not like every other book. It has a spirit, and we have it in our narrations that in the Day of Judgment, this book is going to appear as a human being. And then it would ask for the rights it had for every single one of us. And then every single one of us is going to be questioned for the things we had to do toward this book. It is not like we have to keep this book on a corner of our home without reading it, without contemplating upon it, and call ourselves Muslims.
Exactly.
So we have to go for every single verse and think about it and practice it accordingly.
Yeah. I agree with each and every point of yours.
So, and I guess this is all the time that we have for today.
Yes. So thank you so much, Asma. Thank you so much to your listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
School of Soleimani. Today is the martyrdom anniversary of the unmatched general Qasem Soleimani, whose very name would send shivers to the hearts of terrorists and their masters everywhere in the world. 3 years after the martyrdom of the great commander of the resistance front, and in fact the symbol of this front, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, his name and fame have spread all across the planet more than ever before. He was the great man who feared nothing. This is why the people of the region and the world know him for his courage and valor. As for the last part of this five-part series, we're going to discuss his unique role in thwarting schemes that had been planned by the United States and the Zionist regime of Israel and their accomplices among the Arab world, particularly the regime in Saudi Arabia. Please stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said in a speech, "Some people make a mistake to raise realism against idealism. They think that realism is the opposite of idealism, but this is a big mistake. When a person, an establishment, and a nation, with their officials, persist on ideals and do not agree to come short and work for them, realities will change towards ideals. This is the greatest reality and the law of life. Martyr Qasem Soleimani was a realistic idealist. He enjoyed abundant natural potential to turn his lofty ideals and goals into operational plans. In a part of Ayah 249 of Surah Baqarah in the Holy Quran, the Almighty says, "How many a small party has overcome a larger party by Allah's will?" Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani put this verse into practice in his own life. For years, it was said that the Zionist regime was the fourth military power in terms of strategy and tactics. It was propagated all over the world, especially among the regional nations, and the illegitimate regime is absolutely invincible. But the great commander of the resistance front, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, first challenged this lie through strengthening the resistance units in Lebanon and Palestine, and then he showed that this was simply a big lie with the help of these forces. Today, the Israeli terrorist military is facing a group of people who have been inspired by the thoughts of the Holy Defense era of the 1980s and strongly believe in the divine promises. The sound of annihilation of the Zionist regime can be heard in the streets of occupied Palestine. Qasem Soleimani was described as a nightmare for the Israeli regime, the most powerful general of the Middle East and the architect of Iran's strong strategy. These epithets imply the preeminent role played in West Asia by Qasem Soleimani. American officials, both military and non-military, had asked to meet with General Soleimani several times, but he had rejected all such requests. Marta Soleimani even didn't answer a letter sent to him by John Kerry, the US Secretary of State at the time, begging to meet him. This while he would meet with many senior officials of various countries like Russia. Qasem Soleimani was not a diplomat, but his statements during the meetings with officials of various countries would affect regional plans. He believed that Americans needed the photos of meetings as a tool for propaganda more than negotiations. He maintained that Americans are not honest even in war, and they would betray those who are with them in the same front. This has been done several times in their dealings with Pakistani and Iraqi officials. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani knew the enemy well and was quite aware of its intrigues. He was of the opinion that the United States has a multivalent policy. Hence, when it fails on the ground, it tries to push the rival back in another one. Soleimani said that decisiveness is the only answer to the US plots in this region. Therefore, the messages that Russians conveyed to Americans on his behalf were always decisive and unequivocal. When the former US President Donald Trump started threatening Iran while ranting in a speech, Qasem Soleimani, in one of his speeches in 2018, reminded him of US's disgraceful presence in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Yemen. In fact, he mentioned the reasons for his hostility with the United States. Addressing the US president, Marta Soleimani said, "As a soldier of this nation, I answer you. Are you threatening us with a measure that has been unprecedented in the world? Ask the military commanders, the American politicians, the heads of American security organizations, the KGB and the CIA, and do not utter what you do not know. Have you left anything undone that you could have done?" Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, referring to the United States attacking and occupying Afghanistan, continued in his speech addressing former U.S. President Donald Trump. Lieutenant General Soleimani said, "You came with 110,000 soldiers and thousands of tanks, armored personnel carriers and advanced military facilities, attacked a weakly equipped organization, the Taliban, which had preliminary weapons, and attacked Afghanistan. You didn't refrain from committing any crimes. You turned weddings into mourning ceremonies. You razed whole villages to the ground. More than 60% of your killings have been ordinary Afghans. What on earth have you done since 2001 that you said whoever is not with us is against us? Till now, 2018. Aren't you beseeching Taliban now for peace and talks? Is it not true that you put Pakistan and the government of Afghanistan under pressure for peace talks? What on earth have you done vis-a-vis the Taliban, which is only a part of Afghanistan, that you are now threatening us?" The United States was defeated in Iraq as well. The U.S. regional commander had sent a representative to meet with Lieutenant General Soleimani. They had asked the great commander, "Can you give us respite and use your influence so that our soldiers may not be attacked by the Iraqi Mujahideen in order for us to exit Iraq?" Haj Qasem Soleimani reminded Donald Trump of this in his speech and continued, "Have you forgotten that you would prepare adult diapers for your soldiers inside tanks? Are you threatening our country? And why are you threatening us? On what grounds? Is there any crime left that you have not committed? You have committed the most horrible crimes in Iraq. You broke into the homes of people and smashed women and children. The events which took place in Abu Ghraib prison is a disgrace and a blemish on the United States forever. Are you threatening the Iranian nation?" At the end of his speech, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani forthrightly told Donald Trump and whoever is thinking about attacking Iran, he said, "There is no need for the Iranian armed forces. I am your rival. The Quds force is your rival. Know that we do not sleep any night without thinking of you. I tell you, Donald Trump, the gambler, know that we are near you, where you never think of. We are beside you, where you can never imagine. We are the nation of martyrdom. We are the nation of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. We have passed through hard events. Come, we are waiting for you. We are the men of this field. We know that this war means annihilation of all your facilities. You will start this war, but it is we who will end it."
This is the show A to Z. For today's program, Brother Muhammad is going to talk to us about Islamic education. Stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In today's discussion with regards to Islamic education, we would like to look at an important aspect of the Islamic practical worship system, and that is the act of performance of salah, which is the daily prayer. When it comes to children and to introduce salah to them such that it becomes a part of their daily life, it is very important for us to look at this one principle very carefully out of the different principles of teaching and nurturing salah to children. We find this principle to be very relevant for us, especially for those who live in places that children are not introduced to salah early on and they do not live in an environment that is encouraging salah, and that is to not go into excess and overboard when we are teaching and nurturing salah. This excess and extremism when it comes to teaching salah can have a very severe detrimental effect on the Islamic nurturing and education of children. For example, on one hand, we find that the Holy Prophet himself would caution people from leading salah in congregation in such a way that would overburden the people who are following in the congregational prayer. So for example, a man came to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa alihi one day and he complained about a person who would lead salah but take a very long time in ending the salah. And this person, when he complained to Rasulullah, who is the messenger of mercy, he became quite angered. And he went forward and he told the people, "O people, why do you distract and push people away from salah and from worship? Why do you drive people away from salah? Any person who leads people in congregation should shorten his prayer such that there might be individuals who are sick or those who are weak or those who have certain issues and chores that they have to look after. And shortening of salah in this way would assist in, on one hand, granting them the thawab and the reward of being together in congregation, and on the other hand, it will keep them attached to prayer, to salah, rather than driving them away from it." And it is known from the different companions of Rasulullah that they say that when Rasulullah himself would lead salah, فَإِنَّ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ كَانَ إِذَا صَلَّى بِالنَّاسِ خَفَّ بِهِمْ. And they would say that Rasulullah, when he would lead salah, he would make it very short, such that we even have traditions that when a child once was crying, when a baby was once crying, the Holy Prophet sped through salah, such that the companions were surprised. And they said, "Oh Rasulullah, what happened to you in the middle of salah? You started to speed." And Rasulullah said, "Did you not hear that baby crying? The baby was actually wanting to have milk, and the mother was busy in congregational prayers. And had I extended the salah too long, it would have kept the baby away from the mother. And since I did not wish for that, I sped through salah." So we find this seerah, this lifestyle of the Holy Prophet, to make salat easier. Obviously, when we talk about speeding through salah or making it easier, we do not mean that we let go of the wajib and the obligatory aspects of salah. Rather, we maintain those, but at times, due to circumstances, we do not go through all the different mustahabbat, all the different recommended acts. For example, reciting long surahs is recommended in salah. But when reciting in congregation, it can be avoided. Or when teaching children or leading children through salah, it can be avoided. And such is the lifestyle of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his progeny, that we need to learn from and keep away from excess when nurturing salah in our children. I hope you enjoy today's discussion. Until next time, fi amanillah, under God's protection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
To our website www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Major U.S. indices had a tough 2022, posting their biggest yearly losses in over a decade. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, U.S. stocks dropped recently as investors made their final trades in what was the worst year for the market since the financial crisis of 2008 amid growing recession fears. The Dow Jones Industrial Average slid 280 points, or 0.8%, on the last trading day of 2022 and finished down over 9% for the year. The S&P 500 shed 1.1% and lost almost 20% for the year, while the Nasdaq Composite dropped 1.4%. The tech-heavy index nosedived by over 30% for the year. The three major indices finished what has been their worst year since 2008, as soaring inflation and aggressive rate hikes from the U.S. Federal Reserve battered growth and weighed on investor sentiment. Inflation in the U.S. hit a four-decade high this year, with consumer prices soaring by over 9% in the summer in annual terms. The inflation rate is slowed towards the end of the year 2022. However, experts expect it to remain above the pre-pandemic levels and believe that it will take a few years for price growth to return to 2019 levels. Meanwhile, although some investors expect New Year 2023 to herald a market recovery, many others warn that stocks could hit new lows in 2023. A senior market strategist at Riverfront Investment Group, Rebecca Felton, told CNBC, "We're sort of stuck in neutral right now because there are more unanswered questions than there are known entities. We've got a lot riding on this coming earnings season when we think about the pressures that are going to exist on margins," she explained, adding, "There are a lot of questions as we head into the new year, but we certainly will be happy to see 2022 is over." Also, Los Angeles Times wrote, U.S. stocks wrap up a dismal year with worst loss since 2008. Wall Street capped a quiet day of trading with more losses on Friday, December 30, as it closed the book on the worst year for the Standard & Poor's 500 since 2008. The benchmark index finished with a loss of 19.4% for 2022, its worst loss since the financial crisis 14 years ago, and a painful reversal for investors after the S&P 500 notched a gain of nearly 27% in 2021. The Nasdaq Composite racked up even bigger losses, sinking 33.1%. The index fared much worse because it is heavily made up of technology stocks, which led the broader market slump. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, meanwhile, posted an 8.8% loss for 2022. Stocks struggled all year as inflation put increasing pressure on consumers and raised concerns about economies slipping into recession. Central banks raised interest rates to fight high prices. The Federal Reserve's aggressive rate hikes remain a major focus for investors as central bank policymakers walk a thin line between raising rates enough to cool inflation, but not so much that they stall the U.S. economy into a recession. Xinhua also wrote U.S. stocks dipped on Friday, December 30, to end a very chaotic year as market participants remain concerned about the economic and profitability landscape. In the first half of 2023, the S&P 500 is expected to retest the lows of 2022, but a pivot from the Fed could drive an asset recovery later in the year, strategists at JP Morgan Global Research said in the team's year-ahead outlook. CNBC also had an eye on this issue, writing, "Stocks fall to end Wall Street's worst year since 2008. S&P 500 finishes 2022 down nearly 20%. Communication services was the worst performing sector in the S&P 500 this year, falling more than 40%, followed by consumer discretionary.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A few strive in the cause of God, victory will definitely follow. The following is a part of the speech delivered on June 28, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of top officials and employees of the judiciary. There are four or five cases where God says the divine traditions are immutable. This is because the divine laws are perfect laws. God is not family with anyone. To say that we are Muslims, we are Shia, and we are the Islamic Republic, so we can do whatever we want, is not right. We are no different from anyone else. If we put ourselves in the situation of those first kind of traditions, the result will be that. If we put ourselves in the situation of these second kind of traditions, the result will be this. This is definite. In the year 1981, in the face of all these events and all these severe attacks, we were able to stand on our own feet and frustrate the enemy. And we were able to do this today too. God in the year 22 is the same God he was in 1981. God is the same in times of difficulty and at all times. And all the divine traditions remain in place. Let us try to put ourselves in the situation of the divine traditions for progress.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Now let's talk about the issues relating to the judiciary. Mr. Mohseni Ejayi presented a good report. Let me mention some of these points that I wrote down. He told us in his report that this and that has been done. I would like to say this again. The judiciary is like the other executive branches because one of the fundamental pillars in the country is the judiciary. Not just in our country, this is true everywhere. Your successes and failures are both doomed to the rulings of the divine traditions, and they affect the whole country. This holy verse from chapter Hajj clarifies the duty of all of us. Those who, if we granted them power in the land, will maintain the prayer, give the zakat, and enjoin good and forbid evil. Chapter 22, verse 41. Keeping up prayers means offering prayers. This verse says that a divine Islamic government should increase worshipping, attention to God, and attention to spirituality among the people. The offering of prayers is for this purpose.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Afghan people from different walks of life have gathered at Iran's cultural center to mark the third assassination anniversary of anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani. Participants expressed sympathy with the Iranian nation, saying that General Soleimani was a hero for the entire region.
The pain and grief of the loss of the great martyr Soleimani does not only belong to Iranians. Sardar Soleimani is the hero and flag bearer of the fight against terrorism in the region. He played a very significant and decisive role in our world.
It's the duty of the Muslim world to call for justice for General Soleimani. This huge crime, the killing of a Muslim Iranian general by the U.S., should be investigated by the U.N. Commander Soleimani was targeted by the U.S. when he was busy fighting international terrorism and U.N.-designated terrorist groups.
Participants also said that Commander Soleimani played a key role in the defeat of the Daesh terrorist group in West Asia and in the fight against international criminals.
Commander Soleimani, as a commander of Islam, was there for Muslims everywhere. He was active and supported oppressed people in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Likewise, he was involved in a fight against the arrogance in Afghanistan, too. He trained and directed Afghans to defend their soil against invaders and maintain their freedom. Commander Soleimani fought in a campaign for the freedom of Muslim Ummah.
Along with other admirers of General Soleimani, Afghans every year commemorate the legacy and life of the anti-terrorism hero. Afghan people have long been fighting for their freedom. They remember General Soleimani as a leader and a role model for them and for all freedom seekers. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The Iranian army's radars have spotted a